I read a little bit from the bowl of sake yesterday. I'm going to read a couple of these daily meditations, contemplations, rather, today. And these will be available at the bazaar at Malika's table.
Which is the best version of bowl of sake?
What do you mean?
Well, it's that copy, there's the older one.
This is the best. You know, that Shabdalai tells a story about when he went into a store in India and he said, well, which is best? He said, oh, everything here is the best. You know? No, but we went through it. I went through it and conscientiously I did some editing on it, and with the help of some other people, we tried to get it mostly gender-inclusive language. And then sometimes I took the liberty, because of my connection with Merchant Sam, to try and clarify a little bit what he was saying in his commentaries, adding a sentence here or making a sentence more clear, correcting typos and the like. And so it's and it was newly designed. This is a picture actually Pierre Shabda took of the at the. No, it's a mosque. It's one of the oldest mosques. I don't know where it's. Anyway, it's Nuria Sabato did the design of the book and the cover, and so it's kind of a. It's nice in the sense it's a composite where everyone from the Sufi order, the Sufi movement, the Ruhaniyat all contributed. People contributed to this effort, and now it's available in a nice bound thing. So here we are. This is the saying of Hazrat Inayat Khan: the soul is all light. Darkness is caused by the deadness of the heart. Pain makes it alive. The soul is all light. Darkness is caused by the deadness of the heart. Pain makes it alive. And Merchant Sam expands on this aphorism with this commentary. Soul is the Nuri Muhammad, the universal love, light, life. Soul is the universal love, light, life. The Sufis call it Nuri Muhammad because Muhammad is considered to be the seal of the prophets in the sense that all are contained within him. But anyone who enters the stage of fullness of being what it is to be a complete human being enters into this condition. All of manifestation is the light of God. It's called the light of the personal God in manifestation. I'm not taking questions right now, afterwards. Soul is the Nuri Muhammad, the universal love, light, life, which becomes individualized in the heart. The heart covers the soul as a globe and in a certain sense cannot hide this light. But the heart has a movement like the expansion and contraction of a sphere from a point to a universe. It can contract until it is very tiny and expand until it is immeasurable. Contraction of heart may result from one's outlook on life or one's experience of life. When the consciousness is attracted to outer things and becomes intoxicated thereby, the heart ceases to expand in its natural manner, and this interferes with the light of the soul, which cannot then touch the surface. But the heart cannot forever remain in that state, and if it is not moved naturally to expand, life's experiences through the law of karma sooner or later awaken it. In the physical body, it is true that when a muscle has not been used for a long time, any attempt to move it is accompanied by pain. This is 1,000 times more true for any area or portion of mind, and also infinitely more true of the heart. The soul is all light. Darkness is caused by the deadness of the heart. Pain makes it alive. So we need to cherish those experiences and not just try and have aversion to the pain and suffering of life. That it's all here. So this is a school for the soul. This life is a place where all the experiences that come can be used for the soul's awakening, which is our purpose, so that then we can work for the awakening of all beings and be of service. And so the more we awaken, the more our very vibration and intention and action accomplishes our goal of service to the awakening of beings. I want to read one more thing here, and then I will take a question if necessary. Well, I marked this place, but this wasn't the one I wanted to read. That's the way it goes. Okay, I'm not going to read anymore right now. Okay, you have a question? Yeah.
Two questions. One, how do you account for leap year in that? And do you only read that one every 4 years, or is there one? And my other one is, what does it mean to be a complete human being? Because we're not going to be everything, but all we can be is, you know, ourselves, whatever qualities that we have. So a complete human being is just going to be being who we are. And I mean, I guess you could be a complete human being and be all of it, but I don't know that that's really possible.
Well, Buddha did it. Jesus did it. Muhammad did it. Krishna did it. Mary Magdalene did it. You know, Yeshe Sogyal did it. Hazrat Naik Khan did it. It's rare. Many are called, few are chosen, Jesus said. We're on the path of it. Being on the path of it, is enough. Because the path is it. Sierra, I have to tell you, you're not going to do it in this lifetime. But maybe you'll have...
I'm not even suggesting. I'm just suggesting that we already are complete human beings as we are. And it's like all the rest of it is like, yeah, we can do practices or not do practices or have rhythm or not have rhythm, but we already are it. Just like
we are it, but we don't know it. So what good does it do us?
What good doesn't it do us? I mean,
it doesn't do us any good when we get locked in meaningless, arbitrary arguments. And we just want to get in the realm of mind. It does us good to be that, because the more we awaken, the more, we live in love, harmony, and beauty.
That's, you mean there's hope for me?
I'll tell you a story. I don't want to get into it. We've had these kind of dialogues before, and I don't want to go there because I have other things to do, but not out of disrespect for you. What we're saying is, as Buddha said on his enlightenment, I see now all sentient beings are enlightened. They're simply unaware of it. That's the wahid. That's the perfection that is inherent in every soul. And each one will bring it out differently. And that's what we cherish that. We want to see that. Hazrat Naik Khan said the message of our time is to recognize the sacred in all. That simple as that, to be able to recognize the sacred in all beings. When we do that, we act with, spontaneously, wisdom flows, compassion flows, mercy flows. But I'll tell you a story, because we don't laugh enough here at this camp. and it goes like this. This is a story Papa Ramdas told. And it appears that Lord Shiva decided to take an incarnation, and he manifested as an old sage, and he let it be known, not who he was or anything, but he let it be known that he could tell people how many more incarnations they would have before they attained union with Brahm, with God. And so the people from the town would come came to him. It was a small rural place in India, and the first one came, and he you know, sage said to him, 85 more incarnations and you will achieve union with Brahm. And the next one came and he said, 37 or 129 or whatever, and then they said, well, let's get this yogi over here in the standing all day in the stream, that does all these practices and so on and so forth all the time. He's the most advanced person we know around here. Let's get him to come. And so he came in, and Shiva and this guy said to him, you've worked very hard in your practice, and but I left out a part of the story. Every one of them, when they were walking by to go see the sage, they walked by the town drunk, and he was there, just kind of out of it, and he's walking by, and when they got to this yogi and they brought him in, Shiva said to him, "You've done very well. You've worked very hard, and so forth. Only 5 more incarnations, and you'll achieve union with Brahm." And he wasn't too pleased with that answer, and. So he walked again out by the drunk as he was going, and the drunk said, What did he say? Everybody going in front of him. What did he say? What did he say? He says, go ask him yourself, And so he walked on. So the drunk went up to Shiva, and he says, I just said to ask you, how many incarnations should I have before I get to Brahm? And he said, you've covered your soul, your Atman, with such filth and such neglect and such indulgence that it's going to be, 250 million incarnations before you achieve union with Brahm. And the drunk said, you mean Brahm has a place for me? And he started dancing. He said, you mean? And he got up, and so Shiva gave him the illumination right then and there. So, and so far as the leap year goes, there's a saying here, but I, as I said in the introduction that I wrote for this particular edition, it's a shame that the bowl of sake has only been treated as an oracle. Ajahn Nag Khan didn't have it that way. I mean, people did this. It was a nice exercise, Oprah Winfrey said she reads it every day as an oracle, guidance for her life. So it's gotten out there in this vein, but in so doing, it's kind of like you lose the fact that this there's a lot of spiritual teaching in here. Want another funny story, or should I go into
it? Yes.
More laughter. Okay, laughter led me. An experience of cosmic laughter led me to Murshid Sam, so I have to. I've told that story too many times. Not tell this story. Murshid Sam used to say, because he had both the Zen and the Sufi transmission, used to say the difference between a debate in the East and the West. In the West, the person is considered to win the debate, who spins, has the best arguments, whose arguments are considered better, who, you know, whose rhetoric is better, who spins things better, who makes the better impression, and so forth. And that person is considered to win the debate. In the East, the person is considered to win the debate who can first show the mutual truth from which the two apparently divergent points of view have emerged. This is something to think about. But here's a story about a debate, a Buddhist debate, that is in Zen Flesh, Zen Bones. Was his teacher, Nyogen Senzaki, told this story. And goes like this. There was a very rural monastery in Japan where there lived an abbot who was a real abbot, and his feeble-minded brother, who was also a monk there, and nobody else was there. It was a very poor place, and his brother, who was disabled in that way, also had the disability of only having one eye, the tradition was that if a person came to the monastery and won a debate, then they would have the right to live there for this was a very poor place. They had barely enough to feed themselves. So one day, this traveling monk came and knocked at the door and demanded the right to have a debate with the abbot. But the abbot was very sick and he was in his bed, and so he had no choice but to have his feeble-minded brother have the debate. He said to him, he said to him, did I just lose power here or something? Huh?
It did go off, but it sounds great.
Okay. So anyway, he said to him, okay, so we have to have this debate. We can't afford to lose. We don't have enough rice here to feed him. He says, insist that the debate take place in silence. this monk and the traveling monk, they went into the meditation hall and to have the debate. A few minutes later, the traveling monk knocked on the door of the abbot's room, and he said, "Come in." And he went up to his sick bed, and he said, "I have to give you my respects. Your brother is brilliant, and I have to be on my way." And he says, "Well, he won the debate." And the abbot said, "Well, please describe the debate to me." And he said, "Well, he requested that the debate be held in silence. And so I began by holding up one finger, indicating the Buddha." And I began by holding up one finger, indicating the Buddha. He responded by holding up two fingers, indicating the Buddha and the Dharma. To which I replied by holding up three fingers, indicating the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. To which he responded by holding up his fist, indicating that they're all one, thereby winning the debate. And so I must go, and he left. A few seconds later, his brother comes pounding into the room. Where is he? He says, slow down. He said, "I hear you won the debate." "Debate nothing," he said. "Well, I want to punch him out. Where'd he go?" He says, "Well, slow down." He says, "Describe the debate to me." He said, "Well, I did what you said." He said, I requested that the debate be in silence. But he began by insulting me. He held up one finger, saying that I only had one eye. Well, I thought I would be generous, and so I held up two fingers, indicating that, yes, but you have two eyes. But he added insult to that by saying, yeah, together we only have three eyes. So I was going to hit him, but he ran away.
Yeah, okay, so now we're laughing a little bit. That's good.
I wanted to take a little bit of time and address the two qualities. When I was talking about the divine qualities, which are the perfections that are inherent in every soul, and, you know, to become a fully healthy person, and, you know, fully awakened in that way, we would embody them all, you know. And as Mevlana Rumi said, I feel I'm in a. He said that one of the best ways to approach a realization of God is through the opposites, because there's so many opposites in the way we look at it. You know, and one of the pairs of opposites is yamumit and yamuyi. Yamumit means God is the only cause of death, and yamuyi means God is the only cause of life. And this is cause in the sense of primary cause, not secondary cause. We all know the secondary causes of death are sickness, old age, accidents, etc., things of that nature. And we all know that the secondary causes of birth are, you know, sperms and eggs and related things like that and other creatures. But behind it all, these are names in the sound code of Arabic that have the meaning of causatives. They point to the causality of God behind it. What we find when we contemplate, you know, it's like if you can say yamu mit yamu yi, yamu mit yamu yi, as if you're saying, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh Allah, yamu mit, oh bringer of death, yamu yi, oh bringer of life, yamu mit yamu yi. And then if you do this enough and you really are reflecting on it inwardly to feel the presence of God in the transition of the death and in the transition of the life, you have. I don't think I need this anymore. Can I strip this off?
Sure.
Okay. Then you have some equanimity about it. You come to a kind of equilibrium in relation to it, and all, and this is very good when you're grieving, to try and along with Yasalam to send this sense of the calming of peacefulness to the departing soul, because you know from the standpoint of the inner teachings, as Hazar Inayat Khan says, death dies too. Because when you put any of these opposites together, you find a name or a quality that transcends them and includes them. In this case, Yahai, the ever-living, that which never died, was never born. It's always alive. It's always luminously alive, the ever-living Yahai. But when somebody dies, you don't say, oh, well, they've gone to the Buddha mind or they've gone to the ever-livingness of God, you know, and just brush off the grieving process at all. You go into the feelings around life and death, this precious human life. So, I mean, it's a lot easier for us to think of, gratitude for God, to God, around being the bringer of life, and it's not so easy to feel that gratitude in relation to being the bringer of death. But as Mevlana Rumi said, when have I ever grown less by dying? I died as a rock, became a plant. I died as a plant and became an animal. I died as an animal, became a human. Die as a human. My expectation is to become something way beyond my imagination. When have I ever grown less by dying? But dying, from the inner point of view of Sufism, it relates to all of the stages of the path where you die to the self. Hazrat Nayak Khan says there is one path, the annihilation of the false self in the real, which raises the mortal to immortality. So at every stage, there's a kind of a death. And Mu Yi, which is the ever-livingness, also has something like the animal soul, and it's all full of all this passion and all of these qualities. And while it has all this vibrancy of life in it, it also has impulses that need to be restrained. And that we need to bring death into some of these impulses so that we don't just become a slave of them. Because you can only be free when you can transcend the impulse and act from a place of true choice and not simply from a place of being unable to control the impulse. So there's a lot of deep teachings around it, which I'm not going to go into because I want to take the time to do the practice. And so after you do Yamu Mit, Yamu Yi for a while, and it, depending on you, it may take a long time to come to some kind of equanimity about it. Because we got to break through this place where we think this life is all there is. You see, I mean, so how are we going to, we look at life, at all of the face of this world with all of its limitations and suffering and ignorance and inhumanity, and say, you know, God is loving and compassionate and constantly holds everything and all of this, you know, because we have a very worm's eye view. We don't see behind the veil, and we think this life is ultimate in terms of itself. And so we need to come to a place where we can accept that God is in the is behind, you know, to acknowledge and be grateful for both. Or at least to have a place where we can see the presence of God in both and respect that. We'll do this. But these are transient states, and they all are alive in Yahai. And so what I like to do, because today we're focusing on this, our dear friend Jerry Halim, who was to be with us, has passed. He's one of the teachers here, a teacher in the Native American tradition and also a Sufi teacher. And he died this a few months ago. We're very grateful to have his daughter here with us. And tonight we're going to do some remembrance of him along with some other practices here around it. So we want to acknowledge that he is his presence lovingly, and also to take some teachings around this subject. So let's do this practice. My clock's 3 minutes fast. I don't know. We go like this: Yamu Mit, Yamu Yi, Yamu Mit. Yamu Yi, Yamu Mit, 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 Yamu Yi. Yamu Mit, Yamu Yi, 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 Yamumit. Yamuyi. 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 So breathing in. You imagine now. Yahai. The ever-livingness. Out of the ever-livingness comes this breath that comes into us. That's the Muyi. It incarnates. It lives and it returns to source like a big circle called the arc of ascent and the arc of descent. And as it returns to source, Yamumit. So it's like that's God's in-breath, God's out-breath. Yamuyi, Yamumit. Absorbing back into that eternal being. From that eternal being, radiating, Yamuyi. So we're going to breathe in Yamuyi, and at the top of the breath, hold it and feel Yahai. And from that Yahai, we're going to breathe out Yamumit. We breathe out. We breathe out, see, it's confusing because we're breathing out Yamumit, but God is breathing in Yamumit. And we're breathing in Yamuyi, but God is breathing out Yamuyi. See, it's this eternal circle. And the one good translation Namgyal Rinpoche gave to the Prajnaparamita Sutra, which we spoke about earlier, what is usually translated, what is form, that is void, what is void, that is form. What is forming, that is emptying. What is emptying, that is forming. So this is a very good, you know, everything is forming and emptying, this continuous circle of being. The circle, the very word for eternity or infinity in Arabic is like a circle, you know. So let's just do this practice for a moment. Coming to some sense of deep equanimity around the causality in this transient realm of life and death. Breathing in Yamuyi from the source and returning Yamumit to the source. And then again. So as we breathe in that ray of the infinite sun that is the individuation of our soul, not separate from the source, we feel that when it lands in us fully, the Yahai, and we hold it there. And when we breathe out the Yamumit, we take that place where the breath pauses momentarily at the end of the breath and feel the Yahai, having returned to the source. is to say, Yahai, 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 Yahai. Just take a few breaths, dwelling in that ever-living, undying, unborn, undying. Ever-livingness. Okay, we're done.